entropy link in the chat. The entropy link is also on my Telegram. That's been spread around. You can contribute via BitChute. Bitcoin, which is, you can find the Bitcoin address on my BitChute. And you can also write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com if you want to send bank transfers, or if you'd like my Bitcoin or Ethereum addresses, or if you'd like to contribute in any other way, please get in touch with me. Now, obviously, I'm not on Twitter anymore because a certain group of people who wear small hats don't like me. That means that I'm only on Telegram, Gab, and Parler, and I don't particularly trust Parler, but I don't have the reach I used to have. So if you can share this show for me by tweeting it out, that would be massively, massively appreciated. And this show definitely deserves to be tweeted out tonight because we have an amazing special guest who we will be introducing very, very shortly, and that is, of course, Eric Stryker. Now, before we do that, we have a couple of very, very quick announcements. I'm going to try and get all these announcements done in less than 2 minutes, despite there being five of them. The first announcement is our second Call of Duty Warzone tournament is live on YouTube at 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern time this Sunday. Put it in your diary, get the game downloaded. Add me. All the details are on my Telegram. It'll be streamed live by me. I will also be doing commentary. It'll also be streamed live by our American friends, Chris and American Krogan. What's more, I will also be inviting Ethan Ralph from the Killstream because I'm appearing on his show in the early hours of Saturday morning. That's American Friday evening, early hours of Saturday morning this week. That's a 3-hour show. So please join me there. We'll be inviting him and his supporters and viewers into the Warzone tournament too, trying to get that 150 players. The first one was great fun. This one's going to be great fun. Bring people along, make some new friends. Now, that isn't the only tournament that is cooking. And when I say cooking, that isn't just a figure of speech. Laura's Grandma Towler's and PA baking competition is now underway. And there is an excellent video over on Laura's channel. And she is now advertising that the baking contest looks brilliant. And as an added bonus, we are not only holding a baking contest, but every entry will be entered now into a PA recipe book, which we will be selling to help raise funds for PA. And finally, I am live on Friday night on this channel discussing COVID, the lockdown, vaccinations, and things I can't talk about on YouTube. So that will be an hour-long stream with me answering questions afterwards. And I am going to run a little over with these announcements because we have two more things to mention. We now have a new anti-COVID vaccination leaflet and an anti-lockdown banner that is 5 meters by 1 meter. They will be up on the website by the end of the week. You can download them both, print them off, start distributing them. We now have a full array of anti-COVID, anti-lockdown, anti-vaccination material for people to go out and distribute locally. So I hope I didn't take too long there. And everyone might be thinking, where is Jason? Jason has been replaced for this episode by the lovely Laura Towler. He has been replaced because he's currently in Washington at the Stop the Steal rally. So I will now introduce my new co-host, not Jason, but Laura. How are you doing, Laura? Tell us what you've been up to. Did you have a good new year? And tell us a little bit about the baking contest before we introduce Eric.
Yeah, well, I did have a good new year. Thanks for inviting me. Obviously, it's that first week back at work where you straight back into the swing of things. And today I realised that there were 449 people who signed up to get involved with activism on the PA website that I did not get a notification about. So we now have almost 450 people to send emails to. So it's going to be a very busy week. But what was the other question, sorry, about the baking competition?
Yeah, if you want to say a few words about that before we introduce Eric, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah, if you just go to my YouTube channel or my BitChute channel, Laura Towlett, there's a video on there of how you can enter the baking competition. And I won't talk about it anymore tonight because I think we've got lots of good topics. But I also just wanted to say hello to Eric Stryker. It's my pleasure to be with you here this evening. My Aww. Husband is actually a huge, huge fan of you and Mike Aww. Enoch. So I know that he's very much looking forward to the stream. And also hello to everyone in the chat as well. I hope you're all doing well.
Well, thank you, Laura. We'll introduce our special guest now. We've done all of the intros in less than 6 minutes. That is a record for me, especially with so many announcements. So without further ado, here is the man himself. I've worked with Eric in the past, both on This Week on the Alt-Right and several times on the Dr. David Duke radio show. He is a great, great man. He obviously works very closely with Mike Enoch. He's part of the National Justice Party. He is a thought leader in this movement. He is somebody that we all respect immensely. His output has always been of the highest quality. He always has incredible takes. And we would like to forge closer links with the National Justice Party. We want to work more closely with people like Eric, and we want to support his work, and we hope you support his work too, because he is someone that certainly deserves it. His input into our cause over the last few years has raised everyone's spirits, enlightened many people, and his contribution cannot be underestimated. Eric, my friend, great to have you back on. Great to be working with you again. Please tell us a bit about yourself, what you've been up to, and tell us how the National Justice Party is doing.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm basically a dissident journalist. That's my latest project. I work on national-justice.com. I try to basically get news stories. I try to break away from the typical media environment of opinion and commentary. Now, basically all media, not just nationalist media, but also mainstream media, is just people giving kind of extended Twitter takes on the news of the day. I think we need to break away from that. We need to beat the system to scoops, to stories, and so on. We've broken a couple of stories on National-Justice, for example. We were able to warn the white people of Kenosha that the police officer in that shooting was going to be found innocent so that they could possibly board up their homes and prepare for the riots. We've done a lot of stuff like that. So anyway, as for the National Justice Party, things are going very well. We had an event in the Rust Belt area of the United States recently, the last one a couple months ago. And there was at least, I guess, 250 people there. And that's just from our trusted networks. So if we were to extend that and expand it to the public, we'd probably get a lot more. So the National Justice Party is going great. It's starting to challenge dominant narratives and try and break our people, the white working people, out of this hyper-normalized, hyper-reality. As you know, you probably have seen the Adam Curtis documentary. Break them out of that simulation and actually have an adult discussion on politics. For example, it seems like Chuck Schumer is now going to be the Senate Majority Leader in the United States. Now, for our British friends, that means he gets to be almost like the shepherd for the whores and criminals in the Congress. So the question we have, one of the things, this is perhaps our most controversial party plank, is should individuals of Jewish ancestry control absolutely everything in America? Now, that does not mean we believe in violence. That does not mean we believe in killing people or even taking people's citizenship away. What we want to do is sit down and talk to the public about this and see what they think. What do they think about Joe Biden's cabinet, his incoming cabinet, which is going to be loaded with Zionists in every top position? Do the American people agree with that? And better yet, do they agree with the direction our country is going under this Zionist sovereign? Do they agree with Facebook's speech regulations? Do they agree with the Anti-Defamation League controlling the FBI and pursuing political dissidents over actual criminals? Do the American people agree with America's $23 billion, not $3.8 billion, but $23 billion a year that goes to advancing the interests of Israel? Do they agree with the foreign wars? You know, we talk about the Iraq war, and when we talk about PNAC, which is entirely composed of Zionists, of individuals of Jewish ancestry, who planned the Iraq war, Colin Powell, the Secretary of State, the man who went behind the UN and lied about the weapons of mass destruction, personally said that individuals of Jewish ancestry affiliated with the Israeli government planned and executed the Iraq war. do the people of America agree with these things? So the National Justice Party is not just going to fight to prevent our country from becoming South Africa. We're going to, we have a game plan that is not open to the public yet, but there will be various avenues of activism that could take the form of fighting in the courts, could take the form of running candidates in the future and so on. But at the moment, the main purpose of the National Justice Party is to start debates, start conversations, and better yet, ask why neither of the two parties, the uniparty as they call it, actually represent the interests of the majority of the country. And if they don't, why do we call this country a democracy? So these are all debates that are not happening that we want to force to happen, just merely through our presence.
Well, I think that's very important work, and it's the right way to go about things. You are forcing political change by bringing about the conversations that need to happen. Now, obviously, I know you're not the biggest Donald Trump fan, but I think Donald Trump got a lot of people talking in America. He brought about a lot of change, not through what he did in the White House, but by getting people talking about mass immigration. Now, it seems like today is the end for Donald Trump. I know Jason, I know several other people who have worked on this show in the past are at the Stop the Steal rally as we speak. But Mike Pence has just released a statement. That statement came out in written format sort of a few minutes ago, just before the show was actually starting. That statement was released. I got an alert on my phone. He is not going to be blocking or rejecting the votes cast by the Electoral College today. It looks like Biden will be sworn in. And before Laura asks Eric any questions, I'm going to ask him one more. Eric, is this all part of the plan?
It depends on what the plan is. You know, the major mistake that what we called the alt-right in 2016 and 17 made, but more so, this really took off after Charlottesville with the political police and the lawsuits, the censorship, the system, the monster's immune system completely attacked political dissent in this country, advocacy on behalf of the white working people. So in 2018, there were certain conservative elements that tried to transform this populist movement, which is about fighting against mass immigration, demographic replacement, globalization, fighting against war, fighting against deindustrialization, the massive inequality, which is not just individuals, but wealth inequality by region. All the wealth in this country is concentrated in two or three cities. All of the growth is concentrated in two or three cities. The middle of this country is dying right now. And Donald Trump has not done much for anyone in the middle of the country. So my perspective is this. We need to essentially, we can tactically support certain politicians for sure. I'm not a purity spiler or someone like that. However, if you're going to transform the nationalist movement into Orange Life Matters, well, you're just going to be taken for a ride. And my actual opinion on this is that Donald Trump does not personally think that there was that election fraud that can change the outcome of the election, that his supporters don't think it, his supporters in Washington don't think so, and that Donald Trump has raised almost $250 million in his election PAC after losing the election. Where is that money going? What is going to happen to the people that are following Trump like this? You know, and I'm not one of those people, before someone says it, I'm not one of those people that is here to make fun of them. Listen, I have people near and dear and close to my heart that are doing Stop the Steal right now. Okay, they are following, they will follow Trump to the ends of the earth. But the main lesson to take from this is there's a pro, like you said. Donald Trump has, at the very least, contributed to the discrediting of liberal institutions. And that's ultimately a good thing, because the first step to defeating the liberal system, the neoliberal system, is to discredit its institutions. And you actually see the effect of this on the Republican Party, in that Donald Trump's personal political ambitions have actually caused the party to have to choose between its donors and its voters. The party will continue to choose its donors, but it will have enormous electoral consequences, as we saw in Georgia. So that is a good thing. The end of the Republican Party, you know, to take an inverse opinion on this, as Stephen Ziblatt, the Harvard Jewish academic who studies these things, Stephen Ziblatt has said very clearly that the key to preventing a majoritarian uprising and what he calls fascism is not the left. It's actually a powerful center-right party. And he'll actually compare, for example, the experience of the Tory party, which is an old institution in Britain, with, for example, the weakness of German conservatives in the 1920s, or the weakness of the French phony right in the 1920s. So he is of the opinion that the Republican Party must be kept alive at all costs. However, with its loser, plutocratic, libertarian values. And I'll say this, and I've said this before, libertarianism is worse than communism for a nationalist, because a libertarian mindset is anti-solidarity. Without solidarity, you cannot have nationalism. So the libertarian kind of takes away the kind of salts the ground upon which nationalism can grow, which is why the Zionists have spent enormous amount of money creating a network of libertarian think tanks that did something like the grave injustice of denying the working people of this country their $2,000 check. Okay, so again, my opinion on Trump is that his 2016 campaign was marvelous, was brilliant. I supported him at that time. However, the purpose of our existence is not to be orange knights. We're not here to be Donald Trump simps. We're not here to be people that are going to get in his car where he's the, well, actually, Jared Kushner is driving the car. He's in the passenger seat. And a bunch of trannies and base blacks and so on and so on are in the back. That's not what we're for. We're not here to get on a skateboard and hold on to the back of that car, because it's going to take a weird turn and you're going to fly right off. So that's my opinion on that. I think we need to organize independently, and most importantly, never again ever even consider an alliance with mainline establishment conservatives, which is what Donald Trump did. So yeah, that's my view on that.
So I'll just jump in, if that's okay. I actually had a question for you, but you've already kind of answered a bit of it then. I have to admit that I get kind of disillusioned and bored with mainstream politics, because I just find it so uninteresting. And I'm not sure if it's the same for you guys in America, but I feel like our politicians are always kind of metaphorically talking about the length of a new cycle lane, or you know, a woman wearing a hijab will get called a letterbox, and then that'll be the big thing in the news for 2 weeks, and then civilization's collapsing all around you. So I understand the argument of, you know, these people are less worse, so let's support them. I'm not saying that we should do that, but I do understand the argument. But me, my efforts, I've always directed them towards promoting our value system, what we stand for, our solutions, and trying to help people that way. And the question that I had for you was, do you agree, and you've just said that you do, that we should not direct so much attention towards mainstream politicians, but as a response to that, what should we be spending our time and effort doing instead?
I think that our efforts are best used, and you guys in Britain especially, you have a parliamentary system. Our efforts are best used essentially withholding our support and also being very hard to please. It's being the squeaky wheel. We have to pressure conservatives, not acquiesce to them. We pressure them. We bully and intimidate them through our truth. We have the facts. The conservatives are playing to hyper-reality. And if we don't exist with our factual outlier organizations that actually keep them on message. They will do what Donald Trump did, which is Donald Trump basically ran in 2020 as a conventional Republican. And people don't want to talk about this, but the truth is, a conventional Republican who does not fight against immigration, does not talk about fighting against immigration, does not support law and order. Donald Trump was tweeting about law and order while at the same time talking about the Platinum Plan for Black America, where there would be a massive hundreds of billions of dollars were going to be redistributed from white workers to blacks under a Donald Trump plan. How do you expect people to support that? Okay, so we need to be there and make it untenable for a conservative to please his donors. Most importantly, in my opinion, we need to replace conservatives on the right. Remember, the conservatives are there as gatekeepers, the man in the smoky room that decides the agenda. We don't want that. We want the people to decide. We want our people to have a say in politics. And people like the Republican Party and so on, they are eager to bring us back to the status quo of the Republican Party, which has been to call your opponent a Marxist and an anti-Semite, and that he's the real racist, and to come in second place every time in the I Hate Racism competition. Okay, that is not what is in the interest of the people. I mean, I'll tell you something about the COVID situation in the United States right now. I have my own opinions on COVID. They might be different from you guys, but what I will say is this. There's just one injustice after another in this country. You have the lockdowns happening, whatever the merits of that may be, you have to mitigate the economic damage that does. Okay. So if for the last year, you're locking down businesses, right? And then suddenly you turn around and you support rioters burning down the suffering business over some black grievance crap that anarchists have hijacked. And then again, you lock the country down again and those businesses suffer even more. And then to add the cherry on top, it's one injustice after another. You won't even give people making under $75,000 a $2,000 check. People are gonna blow up. And we see this happening in Washington. You see white working people under perhaps a false consciousness with Trump, but they're blowing up. This is how they're dealing with it, is that they're going to Washington, they're fighting with the police, they're really angry, they're confronting politicians and so on. What do they expect? People are desperate in this country. People are literally going hungry in this country. Middle-class people are lining up. I'll tell you something. Where I live, there was a line of cars stretching back for miles for the local food bank. And the government is completely negligent. And it's because they're arrogant. It's because they're arrogant, and frankly, it's because they don't fear the people. And that is the problem with all this. And I think that conservatives are absolutely a part of the problem. And I'm happy that to some degree, Trump, through his personal narcissism, perhaps he just wants a get-rich-quick scheme, whatever it is, he's putting that above the system's health. And ultimately, that's a good thing, you know, that people stop, they start tuning out of the liberal, democratic, hyper-normalized environment, which, as we saw in the Adam Curtis documentary, right, this was, it's uncannily similar to the final days of the Soviet Union. I mean, as someone living in the United States, you guys in Britain might not actually get to feel what's in the air here. It really feels like this country is about to collapse. I have never seen the United States so unstable in my life. So yeah.
Another thing as well that we focus on at Patriotic Alternative is community building. Just people spending time with each other, getting off the internet, going on hikes. Things are difficult at the moment because of coronavirus, but we have some online clubs as well. We were out on New Year's Day delivering food and sleeping bags to the homeless. That's kind of connected to politics, but it's also separate. You know, people can get involved in community building activities who aren't that interested in politics. Is that something that you guys focus on as well? And how important would you say that is?
Well, at the moment, we are getting there are different laws in the United States for a political organization. So we have to get all that paperwork in line. But from a political perspective, from a social perspective, from a human perspective, I completely agree with you. That's how you build popular and grassroots power, is by going right to the people, asking them what their problems are, and figuring out a way to solve them. That is how a true radical political movement is able to grow. And that's why the system is so eager to dissuade us from doing things like that, you know, caring for the least among us, providing community. You know, one aspect of the modern world that is literally driving people crazy is the alienation, anomie. The actual loneliness is a crisis amongst people. Young people are lonely. Young men can't find a date. Like, it's not so much my generation, but if you go to like the younger guys, like the early 20s and stuff, they can't find a date. And part of it is also the way they've been raised in this system. But there's also a lot of things institutionally instated, where a young man that tries to, you know, pick up a girl or flirt with women is accused of sexual harassment. He's basically categorized as a rapist. So, you know, there's so many social problems that we need to organize to solve, you know. And I think these kinds of acts of solidarity, I think what you guys are doing, where you have your like video game competitions, where you're helping the homeless, you got a baking competition and so on. These kinds of things all would build community. They build camaraderie. They build friendship and ultimately build solidarity. And that is contagious because nobody else is offering it. Not even the churches, not even the different social clubs, not even various other things, because our society has become so politicized that if you don't share and signal towards a very narrow neoliberal left perspective on the world, you are essentially excluded from public life. You may even lose your job in the United States. So it's very important to have these kinds of anti-fragile networks of friends to resist, you know, and I think that's a great thing that you guys are doing.
I think you said something else that was very important. This is something I've said a lot in the past. We don't just need to appeal to conservatives. We don't want to be conservatives, and we don't want to try and form bridges with conservatives. We want to smash the conservative movement and turn people into radicals. And we've seen this problem here in the UK. Obviously, in 2016, you supported Donald Trump. I think we all supported Donald Trump. I don't think there was anybody who was part of the dissident right that didn't support Donald Trump. But we all also supported Brexit. Brexit was something that was very important. And we saw this fantastic populist right movement both sides of the Atlantic. You saw Brexit first, then you saw Trump a few months later. And everything seemed to be going in our direction. But when you go to Brexit and you look at what happened with Brexit, it should teach every nationalist a very, very important lesson. The people voted for Brexit. The people defied the globalists. They voted for Brexit because of mass immigration, because of globalism, because of a loss of identity, because they wanted sovereignty and control back over their land. But once they had voted for that, they left the decision-making, they left the implementation of that vote in the hands of conservatives. And now here we are in 2021. And has Brexit actually taken place in a meaningful fashion? No, it hasn't. And I think that should teach everybody exactly what you're saying. That is a real-world example of what we're talking about now. If you try to appeal to conservatives, if you leave them with your destiny in their hands, you're asking for trouble. All of these old parties need to be smashed, and they need to be replaced by a radical revolutionary nationalist party that at its heart wants what is best for people of European descent. But this is what I've got to ask you. I've repeatedly said Donald Trump has been very good. He has made people talk about immigration. He's legitimized talk about immigration. He's undermined people's faith in the media. He has attacked globalism. He has undermined people's faith in the government and the electoral system. He has polarized the public. And all of those things play into our hands. But I believe today he might be playing one final card that could help us out to a huge degree. And I know people in the chat are thinking, what's Mark saying? He's being nice about Trump again. Oh, my God, when's he going to stop saying this? But today, in a very real sense, Trump could deal a death blow to the GOP, to the Republican Party. And when he does this, when he says all of those mainstream Republicans have stabbed 70 million plus voters in the back, many of those 70 million voters will no longer trust the Republican Party. And as you've said, the thing that prevents nationalists coming to power is a conservative movement that acts as a barrier between the people and a real revolution. And I think Trump might put a massive crack in that barrier today, a crack which over time will grow and may undermine the Republican Party totally. What do you think to that? Do you think there is a chance that Trump's antics today in Washington will actually clear the way for a massive nationalist surge in America?
I don't think that is predicated on Trump in particular. My opinion on Trump is that the only cards, the only 5D chess he's been playing is on his supporters. Okay. That's the analysis I have over the last 4 years of his presidency, is that Donald Trump, when Donald Trump tells you he's going to do something, you can reliably predict what's going to happen by assuming that the opposite will happen. So when Donald Trump goes out there and says, I'm going to fight for your $2,000 check, we understood that that check was never coming. When Donald Trump said he was going to sign an executive order to end birthright citizenship, we understood that was never happening. So Trump himself is pro-Trump. Trump is a member of one movement, and it's called Orange Life Matters. There's nothing else that Trump is really that interested in, and he is manipulating people. With that said, however, there is a lot of merit to what you're saying, in that the contradictions of the Trumpism will actually potentially cause a fracture in the Republican Party. But that's not entirely just because of Trump. That's more so because the Republican Party's ideology, which is to give tax cuts to billionaires while also releasing millions of black criminals, while also attacking their own voters. The Republican Party's problem has always been that they only want to serve the customers they want rather than the customers they have. Someone else actually brought this up. So that is really what's going to cause the fracture in the GOP. Remember, John McCain and Mitt Romney both lost the election when they ran. I believe that the Republicans have lost almost every popular vote since Ronald Reagan, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, maybe even further. But the point is, the Republican Party's agenda is not popular. And so the issue they have now is that people that have presidential ambitions, like Josh Hawley or Ted Cruz, will cynically play to Trump hyperrealism in order to advance their own political careers. And this may actually cause a bit of a nuisance for the Republican Party establishment. I mean, the political career of Mitch McConnell, who is one of the most noxious little worms in Washington, is essentially over now. And the reason it's over is because he basically appointed a polished turd named Kelly Loeffler to a Senate seat in Georgia. She ran for election. They appointed her because she was wealthy and because she also is a corporate woman, and they assumed this would play well with suburban soccer moms. Well, she just lost the election. And if you look at how Kelly Loeffler has been voting and legislating, just last summer, she sponsored a bill called the Justice Act. The Justice Act would have made it impossible for police officers to actually enforce the law against black criminals. It would have made it super difficult. So if you're going to have two parties that support the same anti-white agenda, what is the point? I mean, one of the parties at least isn't even trying to get the white vote. The other party relies entirely on the white vote. So the one thing whites can do is Wexit. Stop voting for Republicans. And they are doing that. And that is why the GOP is bound to collapse. There's nothing to be gained from the Republican Party. All you do is reelect more and more people to loot our country. The Republicans are looting our country. Kelly Loeffler was speculating on the stock market related to pandemic stocks with her inside knowledge in the Congress. So if you have people like that in the Congress, what is even the point? And that is the actual epiphany that millions and millions of Trump supporters have come to. So the point now is, how can we win those people, in a post-Trump environment? But like you said, we cannot placate the unreasonable or, frankly, sometimes idiotic things that some people believe on the right. We have to be sensible while also being populist and giving people what they want and need. That includes, and the last thing I'll say is, remember, every white is a potential comrade. It doesn't matter what their political views are in a stated place. No one here was born with these political perspectives or moral cultural ones. So you have to be open and sympathetic and empathetic that people, whether they're Trumpian conspiracy people or whether they're leftists that are now fighting with the Democratic Party for Medicare for All, which is a lot of them are Gentile leftists like Jimmy Dore. We have to understand the echo chambers these people are in and simply get on our little soapbox and tell them what we think and incorporate both sides into our third position. That is actually what we're trying to do. You know, we can't be caught up in a fad or a temporary trend or a media-induced hysteria. We have to always have a consistent message. And we can be pragmatic, but the core of the message and the end goal must remain the same. That's my view on that.
Well, my only worry about this is we do need people on the ground right now, because I think, looking at the scenes that I'm seeing in Washington, there are a lot of angry people, and those angry people are overwhelmingly white. And I believe after this election, those people will be looking for a new political home. And the only thing I'm going to follow up that statement with before Laura asks another question is, I do sincerely hope they find that political home within the National Justice Party. Mm-hmm. Because I believe, and you used a very well thought out statement there, you said the third position. I believe that third positionist politics is important because it straddles old divides. You can talk about traditionalism with former conservatives. You can talk about moral values with former conservatives, but you can also talk about workers' rights and ensuring that the working class aren't treated like an underclass with former Labour supporters or former Democrats. And yeah. I saw that when I was in the British National Party. And I really hope that in the wake of this, because I think another good thing about Trump is he won old Democrat heartlands.
Right.
Because at one point he was a very watered down, but he still was in a way, a third position candidate, because he appealed to old conservatives as well as old Democrats. He appealed to the working, the white working class, as well as appealing to the white middle class. And he appealed to both in slightly different ways. And I think that's the strength of what we do, that we can appeal to almost any white out there because we have answers for everybody. And ultimately, that answer can only be fully explained when you explain it based around race and nation. And I think that what Trump is doing now, radicalizing so many white people who are former Republicans or will be former Republicans after today, I think that is something that we need to be very active amongst, and we need to be working very hard to turn those people into nationalists as they look for their new political home.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, those people to some degree are already nationalists. It's just that the people that are trying to shepherd them on the phony right are not articulating what they feel. Remember, they're angry, a lot of these people, and they're angry about very real things. This is just how it's being manifested in the in these Stop the Steal rallies. But they're angry about other issues in this country. The issue of, you know, I just saw a video, for example, of a white mailman who went to a apparently a Mexican woman's home to deliver a package, and there was a problem with the package, and he goes, "Man, I wish these people would speak English." He was recorded on one of those creepy Amazon doorbell recorders. The people sent it to his boss, and he got fired. He has no recourse. Got fired in the middle of the pandemic. You know, those are the kinds of injustices. That's the kind of oppression that will make people snap, frankly. Okay? And, you know, Mike Enoch actually said this best. Michael Painovich, chairman of NJP, he said it best. He said, you know, if you see people doing kind of almost sometimes a little kooky takes on COVID on the right, working people that believe in these things, it's because they don't have a choice. Because it's a matter of, do you believe COVID is real, or do you want your life savings and your small business and your job to be erased forever? That's the binary that the system has put them in. That's the bind. And so people simply cannot afford to believe in the COVID, that COVID is an actual virus. Okay. And so the point I'm making here is that you're totally right. I think these people are subconsciously, at the very least, already nationalists. They just haven't heard our message. And the reason they haven't heard our message, it's designed that way, is the Zionists block us from being able to talk to them. They have completely deplatformed us from the internet. And so a bunch of, you want to call them grifters, have filled that vacuum and are basically profiting off their anger and misery. So we need to figure out a way to get around these censors, get around the oppression, and actually engage in our First Amendment right to speak to our people, to express our political grievances, and actually build a political movement that represents what these people are feeling. You know, that's my take on that. But you're right.
It's interesting that you mentioned those little doorbell cameras that spy on people, because we had a problem with them in England when we were delivering leaflets. We had police officers tweeting, asking people to send in recordings of people who had delivered racially worded leaflets. It's just, people say it all the time, but it is like some sort of totalitarian 1984 state where they're actually spying on people, and people are grassing up so that they don't get in trouble themselves. But actually, Mark, it is 7:45. 45 minutes have absolutely flown by, and I know that you wanted to maybe talk about the lockdown. So should we move on to that topic?
We can do if you wish. I mean, I really like what we're talking about now, but it is something that's very important, because it is the first episode of PWR since we've gone into our third national lockdown here in the UK. And I think Eric's made some really good points about how hard these lockdowns are biting for normal people. Now, I think what Boris Johnson's done is absolutely disgusting. And as I said, we do have a new leaflet just about to come out. And that new leaflet is called, if I can find it, which I hope I can, it's called No Forced Vaccinations. It says no health passports, no restrictions on our freedom, end the lockdown. It's your body. You should have the freedom to choose. And then it states on the other side, only 388 people under the age of 60 with no underlying health conditions have died of COVID as of the 27th of the 12th, 2020. Over half of people who get COVID are asymptomatic and don't even know they've had it. Britain's Nightingale hospitals that were built to deal with COVID patients are empty, and Public Health England have been repeatedly accused of exaggerating COVID death totals. Now, that's a very important leaflet, and it'll be up on our website, ready to be downloaded by the end of the week, and it will go hand in hand with our anti-lockdown leaflet. Now, the important thing is here, if you are under the age of 60 and you have no underlying health conditions, the likelihood of you dying of COVID is about the same likelihood of you being killed in a car accident. It's ridiculously low. Only 388 people between the beginning of the outbreak and almost the end of December last year had died of COVID. So why on earth are we all in lockdown? Because this is a case where the alleged cure, i.e. repeated lockdowns, is far worse than the disease. It's doing far more damage than the disease itself. Because if you're under the age of 60 and you're healthy, you could be out working. You could be out opening your restaurant. You could be at the pub. You could be going shopping. And whilst the government is talking about bailouts, and while some companies like Amazon and other companies that have large mail order arms are doing very, very well from all this, it is the small business that is suffering. It's the small coffee shop. It's the little cafe on the end of your street. It's the sandwich shop. It's the in America, they call them mum and pop stores. It's the small business. It's the small retailer that has been hit hard. I remember in the village I live, we had a hairdressers that had been open in the village, what, barbers that had been open in the village, I think since about 1984. That closed down last year because of COVID. And this is how it affects normal people. And I think COVID is doing something which is very interesting. I'll talk about this a lot more and in much greater detail on Friday. But COVID is doing something very, very interesting to our people. It is massively widening the gap between the global elite and the people at the very top of society and the people at the bottom. And what's more, everyone who is under the global elite is being compressed into one large penniless underclass that are all suffering immensely as the global elite get richer and don't seem to have any form of restrictions placed upon them. A great example of this is Premier League football. I was talking to a friend about this today. I don't know if you've seen the new rules, but all amateur football has now banned in Britain. The only football that's allowed is the Premier League. So if you are some oligarch who's bought a football team as a plaything, as like one of your toys, as something to tell all your oligarch friends, oh, look, I own Tottenham or I own Chelsea. You're all right. Your team will still be playing. You will still be making huge amounts of money from television appearances, from merchandise sales, from all the rest. But if you're a guy who polishes your own boots on a Saturday night before the game on Sunday down at your local club, well, you're not playing. That's your hobby done. That's your fitness done. That's your passion out the window. And this tells you everything you need to know. And here's a tip. Don't support any of these football clubs. If you're still supporting Premier League football now, if you're still watching the match, if you're still buying the shirts, you're supporting something, or you're supporting an industry that hates you. What do you think to that, Laura, before we get Eric's take?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I used to be a massive football fan. I used to travel around the country watching my team every weekend. And I just became so disillusioned with it because, for a start, I think I used to be a Chelsea fan. And I think there were like two white players in my football team. The rest were from Africa and all over the world. And then when they started doing the rainbow shoelaces and the rainbow patches on their shirts, and then I'm glad that I lost interest in them before Black Lives Matter, because they all kneeled as well during BLM. So I've lost interest in football. But actually, we've been in the news recently, Patriotic Alternative, because we've been disrupting the Swansea football matches. We've had people who have been booing their players because they've been kneeling, and we've made the local news, which is good because it always brings us a new wave of registrations. But yeah, I'm just not really interested in football anymore, or soccer, as you guys call it.
Yeah. The spectator sports. I know that in Europe, football franchises are they're an institution, and they're supposed to represent the people in the places where they're based out of. And if you just have what I call it is like, I remember looking at Manchester City. That's a totally soulless AstroTurf. I call it an Arab's football harem, where he gets all the best players in the world and he uses his oil wealth to put them on the pitch. And, you know, it's just not fun. It's meaningless. It's just entertainment for the wealthy, basically, at this point. But as for COVID, so I have a bit more of a nuanced view of this. So I'll say this. Number one, the binary I believe in is lockdowns or money. The Danes have a lockdown, but they pay the unemployed and the people that are furloughed 80% of their wages every month. Why don't we have this in our Anglo-Saxon countries? You have another situation, too, where the question of borders. The countries, I believe it was Canada, closed its border a month before the United States. I mean, the people in Washington knew there was a pandemic in China, and they dragged their feet to close the border. It took a Donald Trump executive order to do it. And so if you know there's a pandemic in China, why are Chinese people still flying to the United States? So I think the poor policing of our borders is another question that led to the COVID epidemic. That's why it's so much so much worse in the United States than in Canada. Now, the very last thing is that COVID simply exacerbates the autoimmune problems already existing in liberal countries. So, for example, wealth inequality. Well, this has been happening. You know, mom and pop stores in the United States, at least, have been gobbled up by big business, Amazon, Walmart, and so on. They've been destroyed by these companies since at least the 1980s and 90s. The internet has only worsened this. You know, brick and mortar stores, probably in our lifetimes, will become obsolete, except as niche or novelty items. So these are all the wealth inequality and the concentration of capital in the hands of a few. This was already happening, and COVID has only exacerbated this. Now, what my view ultimately is that the main lesson to take from COVID is the sheer inefficiency, the sheer corruption, the sheer lack of political initiative to genuinely protect the people of the West. That's because the insectoids that control our governments don't give a shit about anyone in this country. They will always drag their feet to do anything that might benefit or even protect the common man. And so what the question is here is, how is it that China is already back to normal, and yet all the liberal countries, the United States has a COVID death rate on par with third world countries like India and Brazil? It's a huge international embarrassment for our elites, what's going on in this country. And so I find that this embarrassment is what is perhaps causing the liberal elites of America, and perhaps Britain as well, to overcorrect. For example, why does a small town in, you know, some place in the middle of the country need to have the same lockdown as New York City, which, in my opinion, New York City should be locked down because it is a total disease vector. I mean, as someone who was born and raised there, I'll tell you, I've caught some very exotic flus riding the subway. And it's just a disease vector. So if you don't have a lockdown in New York City, you're going to have a big problem because it's such an incoherent place because of the multiculturalism, because of the corruption, because of the wealth inequality. And so it's a very nuanced question that I find that is ultimately a massive embarrassment. It could even be the end of the United States as world hegemon. And I find that this is good and bad. Bad because it's going to hurt our lives. It's going to hurt us individually in the short and medium term. But I find that it's good because if liberalism is put in the showcase box and it's shown to be an abject failure, that is yet another barrier to the growth of nationalism that is being wrecked. It's being broken. So my view on COVID is I want to talk about why our borders are so wide open that pandemics that in previous years were not really like SARS and so on did not really reach the United States in this way. How is it that our borders have loosened to the point where they can, especially when our government knows about them happening in other countries? And second, why is it that we have such a, you know, the way the Chinese COVID thing in the bud was a little extreme. But why is it that all these, you know, our government only intervened in the economy, for example, to help people when the stock market was falling? You know, these are questions that I'm very interested in and don't really have an answer. The answer is that America is a complex life support system for essentially 18 million of the world's Jews. And then there's a lesser traitor janissary class that is looting our country, pandemic profiteers like Jeff Bezos. The government tomorrow could decide to tax Jeff Bezos' pandemic profits and redistribute them to small businesses that have been hurt by the pandemic, and they refuse to do so. So these are all policies that I find that sometimes in the COVID argument tend to get lost in certain other aspects, right? But you know, I think what it's exposed is that America is now, I think, this is the moment where we can officially say America is a third world country. I'm not sure about the intricacies of how it's happening in Britain, but you find that the more multicultural countries, the less white countries are having a bigger problem handling COVID than the liberal multicultural paradises like the United States, you know?
I think it's interesting what you say about there not being answers, because it definitely is the same over here. And that's why I'm struggling to take it seriously, I guess. And that's why I won't be taking a vaccination, because if the government genuinely did care about our health, the first thing that they would have done was close the borders. It's just common sense, and they never did that. So why should we believe anything else that they say? But I think from a personal point of view, I actually don't mind the lockdown at all, because I'm actually quite antisocial, and it gives me a reason or gives me an excuse not to have to go out. And I also work from home as well. So financially I'm okay. But I think when you're a nationalist, you always care about, you know, the health of your people and the health of your nation. And the reason why I'm against it is because, like Mark said, you know, small businesses, we've had a cafe near us closed down. When it came to Christmas as well, my family usually goes around a lot of little boutiques and gets like handmade gifts and stuff. And it was really sad to see that a lot of those small businesses had closed down. I think those businesses who did make it through previous lockdowns, will they make it through this one? I'm not sure. And then we also have to consider the mental health of our people, and, you know, whether people are actually just locked up by themselves with nobody to speak to. And I've seen quite a lot of posts on Twitter of people saying that their brother or their grandfather committed suicide because he didn't want to see anyone, he was scared, and then his mental health deteriorated. I'm not sure if you two, has anyone seen the suicide rates over the last 12 months? I'm not sure if they've shot up or anything. Have you seen them?
Well, two things with that. Number one, yes, the answer is yes, but the suicide rates for white males in the United States have been exploding in the last 15 years. It's actually to the point where it's its own crisis. And like I said before, the issues in a country become exacerbated in a time of national emergency. So the issue of wealth redistribution that's going upwards, the issue of loneliness, of depression, I would not be, I'm kind of I hate to say it, a little bit of a sensitive guy, and I need human contact. And so if I didn't have that, which I have through my community, through loved ones and so on, if I didn't have that, which millions of people in this country don't, I would probably be very depressed right now. Even with that, personally speaking, throughout the lockdowns, they closed down my gym. They closed down a pub I like to go to, my favorite pub, so on. And basically, you start to develop bad habits. You start drinking more alcohol. You start, I was throughout the summer, I was drinking a lot of alcohol, and I realized this very recently, and I stopped. But I totally understand that how people are financially, but more importantly, psychologically suffering from this lockdown. And again, a responsible government would create ways to mitigate these things. Like, why is our government so hands-off when it comes to this stuff? We need an activist state that looks after the people, that actually, some of those Nordic countries, I don't want to romanticize them because they have a lot of problems, but they've been actually doing stuff like that. They encourage people to do events outdoors, and they have, they're doing a great job financially helping people that are suffering through lockdowns and so on. We don't have any of that in the U.S. and the U.K., and I think this kind of negligence of our government is ultimately going to be the demise of the liberal order. I totally agree with you, Laura, on all those topics. That I, even though me personally, my financial situation is always shitty, so it doesn't really make much of a difference for me. But if you're a person who's used to making $70,000 a year as a small business owner or something, you're probably going through a lot mentally as you rack up credit card debt, as you see that there's no government relief in sight, as you realize all these different issues, you might just throw in the towel, and I think that's a very concerning thing as well.
Well, I can tell you, I'm not somebody who gets down about a lot of things, and I have a little bit of a dark sense of humor too. So I tend to laugh these things off. But if there's one thing that has really, really annoyed me, it's the closing of the gyms, because people's health goes right down the pan. And I have lost so much of my of so much muscle over the last year. It's unbelievable. I've slimmed right down. My shoulders, my biceps, my pecs, everything has lost muscle. It really annoys me. And what's worse is the stop start. So as soon as the gyms reopened, I was back down there. And I remember being down there working really hard for a month or so. And I rarely ever get compliments off my missus. But she said, I think it's really paying off. You can really see you are piling it back on now. And then we had the second lockdown. And then we got back into the gym. And again, I'd lost a lot. And now it's all happening again. And it really is an absolute killer. And people rely on that exercise. People rely on going to the gym. People rely on that for a boost of, of good endorphins. But where it really hits people, and I can say this because, having a little girl, I understand this now. But my lady always takes Sophia out to different groups, to meet people, to go for walks. They go to this stately home and they go for a walk in the grounds. They go to feed the ducks. We used to take her to soft play, and all that ending is enraging because it's stealing my daughter's childhood. We used to take her to this gigantic soft play area, which had about three stories, and she's quite adventurous. I talk about her quite a lot, and she used to love it, even though it was a bit advanced for her, and we used to have to help her up some of the bigger climbing areas because she's only small. But she used to love it, whizzing down on the slide on Daddy's knee or climbing up some of the bigger sort of like inflatable bits or the bigger cushioned bits. She used to love it, but she can't do any of that, and she's missing out on that. And that's not something she can get back. We won't have these months and years, these precious times with our daughter ever again. And she's missing out on things, and we're missing out on experiences. And why? And why? I'll tell you why. Because they want to take our freedoms away. Any sensible nation would have rejected a full lockdown and isolated those people who were the most at risk. If elderly people are going to die en masse, they should be isolated, looked after, and the people who are caring for them should be very, very careful. But people like myself, people like my girlfriend, people like my daughter, we do not need to be locked down. We do not need to have our rights taken away. And the fact they've taken away my gym annoys me. But the fact they are taking away activities that I do with my little girl that she'll only enjoy for so many years, and those years, they fly by. I can't believe she's nearly 18. Well, she's 18 months old this month. I can't believe it. The fact they're taking those precious times away from us, these people are sick monsters, and they're all getting rich off this. They're the ones who are giving out these different healthcare. They're awarding these, you know, giant healthcare contracts to their friends to make masks, to build hospitals that no one's in. It's a sick joke. And when it comes out how rich some of these Tory donors and the people floating around the periphery of the Tory party have got off this, it will make people absolutely sick. Clip this out. I'm calling it now. These people have got rich off our misery. But anyway, that's been an hour and 7 minutes, and this is flying by, and we have loads of super chats. A lot of people have questions and comments for Eric. He really has brought a lot of fans tonight. So let's start doing some of these. The first is from Baelish Basher, who gave $10. Thank you very much. He said, Mark, I noted that YouTube deplatformed talk radio on Monday for what they claimed was COVID misinformation, and yet then backtracked and reinstated them yesterday. What on earth goes on with YouTube? Who owns them, and why do they behave like they behave in such a tyrannical fashion? Well, I'm going to tell you something now. YouTube was an amazing place. It's a place full of free speech. It was a place full of great discussion. It was a place where you could watch alternative documentaries, where you could hear alternative theories and thoughts on many different things. You could learn alternative history about things like the Second World War. You could learn about all kinds of revisionism. And now it's a ghost town. Now it's filled with unboxing, cat videos, makeup tutorials, and dead-headed left-wing political garbage that no one wants to watch. And why? Because they placed Susan Wojcicki in charge. Everything began when she became the CEO of YouTube. And that's why this show's on DLive. And that's why my show about these things on Friday will be here on DLive. Because YouTube is dead to people like us. Because the people who control it have a vested interest in the Zionist agenda.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you're totally right. YouTube has become an even shittier Netflix. The only reason to go on YouTube is to watch Vibe and Cat videos. Other than that, like, there's no reason to even log on to there, you know?
You know, the thing I most enjoy about YouTube, I enjoy watching clips from The Sopranos. That's about my most watched things. All my favorite clips from The Sopranos are there in easily digestible fashion. But other than that, I don't even watch gaming news on there anymore because I keep getting recommended stuff from channels, which is all full of like why we need more homosexual representation in our computer games. No, we don't. No, we don't. I want to play Call of Duty Warzone with Captain Price and Soap and Ghost. I don't want to play it with a group of bummers. No chance. This is not what I signed up for. I don't want to play a Second World War game where guys are holding hands before they leap into battle to defeat the Nazis. No chance. It's not happening. That's not what we wanted. But you've got all these YouTube channels being suggested to you that are pushing these types of games and these types of narratives. It's not what we want. And hopefully YouTube will die a slow, painful and financially debilitating death for YouTube. But we do have so many super chats. So we have one from Junta Momonari, $20, a fantastic supporter of the show. Thank you very much. He said, the recent events in Ireland with Black Lives Matter. Now, I don't know if you've seen this. If you haven't, yeah. Go to my Telegram. Blacks on the streets of Ireland demanding Irish land for black people. People have stated this will happen when whites are a minority. White, a minority in Latin America, are much better off economically. Average is not working class. It would be unthinkable to put in South African-style policies in Colombia or Mexico. There is something else causing it. We know what is causing it, and we know why they're doing it in white nations. Thank you so much for the super chat. Ghastly gave $10. He said, Mark and Stryker, heroic leading in their country. Thank you for all that you do. I can tell you for a fact your message echoes throughout the world. Well, thank you so much for the kind words, my friend.
Yeah.
Glenn the Chinaman gave $10. Thank you so much. He says, I notice whenever Syrian girl is on an alt-right podcast, people ask her if she is white. This surprises and confuses me. I'm sorry if this is obvious, but I'm not from the West. What do you mean by white? Is it just white skin and light eyes? If so, millions in the West and Central Asia can fit into that. No, being white is shorthand for people of European descent, just like black is shorthand for people of African descent. We are talking about people of European descent. However, Syrian girl, she is Caucasian, but I wouldn't say she's of European descent. She maybe has ancient European roots because Syria and Egypt were at one time Caucasian, or more accurately, Mediterranean empires. I really don't like it when people start asking me, what does white mean? No Syria, one can ask, what does black mean?
Many Syria is on the East Mediterranean and has heavy Greek influences along with others as well. So there are going to be people that at least look European in Syria. That's not like like everything. Remember, color is race can be a spectrum, as just like color is. There's light green, light dark green, and so on. That doesn't necessarily defeat, because notice, Mark, that when it's time to attack white people, suddenly everyone knows exactly who's white. But when white people want to engage in self-defense and organize autonomously, oh, who's white? I don't even know. What does it even mean? Or people of this place white? How about this? How about that? You know, it's very much a political tactic. It's a dirty trick. I'm not accusing Glenn the Chinaman of that. He might be just genuinely curious. But oftentimes when it is deployed in that way, the who is white troll. That is oftentimes a like I said, a troll, you know.
Well, I think Glenn the Chinaman was genuinely asking. He seems like a very nice guy. He's donated another £10, and he says, sorry, this isn't a question. There was a speech recently blaming all non-Western countries for overpopulation. However, my home country of Taiwan and all other countries have a -1 fertility. There is a nosedive in fertility everywhere outside of Africa. Africanization, not overpopulation, is the problem. Well, thank you, Glenn. I've got to agree with you there, and we've said this many times on this show, that and so is Junta Momonari. He always sends generous super chats pointing this out, that everywhere across the world, whether it be Europe or East Asia, that has high IQ civilizations are now becoming underpopulated or have an aging population. And this is affecting all civilizations in this way. Yet Africa is booming with population, and those people are being brought here. So thank you again for the super chat, and thank you for the Thank you for the questions. Jude Tube Showed Casa JB gave $25. Thank you very much for the generous super chat. And he says, hail PWR, hail Striker. Well, thank you very much. Serena JB gave £5. Thank you very much. And he says, there seems to be a divide between American nationalists who tend to believe in a pan-white nationalist movement and European nationalists who tend to have more of an ethno-nationalist point of view. What's the panel's view on this? Well, I'll answer. We'll all have to answer quickly, but I'll answer first. And I'll say this. I believe that people of European descent all over the world are facing exactly the same problems, and we need to work together to ensure that we all survive, because we're all in the same boat. And it's not a coincidence we're all facing the same problem. We are all facing the same enemy. However, I do believe that the pan-European sort of ethos comes more from America, and that's understandable, but I am a firm believer that we do need to preserve our people and our race, but we also need to preserve our ethnic integrity. I don't want to see the French, the Germans, the Swedes, the English, the Scottish. I don't want to see all of us lose our individuality and our the things that make us individual. I think we all have very, very beautiful and individual cultures that should be preserved as well. We'll go around the panel. Laura, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I just think that there's so much beauty across Europe, you know, and I want to go to Italy and see Italian people and hear Italian being spoken and see Italian food and culture and all that kind of stuff. And it would be unfair for us to fill Italy up with British people. So just in the same respect, I want Britain to remain British. I don't just want Britain to be white. But I think obviously if you had to consider whether you would prefer European immigration or non-European immigration, obviously I would prefer European, but I don't think it's a choice of either or. I think we can say that we want Britain to stay British. And just very quickly, there are plenty of European people who live in Britain who are fantastic people, and I'm not saying that they have to go home because they're not British, but you know, if I could wave a magic wand, then every country would just stick to its own ethnic group rather than race.
Yeah, I sort of agree. You know, the first thing I'll talk to Mark about is, you know, I've traveled extensively in my lifetime. And I've seen, you know, I've been to Spain, I've been to Ireland, I've been to Canada, I've been to Argentina, I've been to many countries. And I noticed that the white working people, the normal ordinary white person on the street, is facing the exact same problems, literally the exact same problems. And you know what? Their enemies are the same ones. So you go to Argentina and it's Suar and Sofovich. You go to Britain and we know the people there. We know the people in America. We know the people in Canada. We know about George Soros, and we know about in South Africa, the ditto. So the point is that it's not just that all white people are suffering the same thing. They're suffering it at the hands of an international enemy that is coordinating across borders as well. So there needs to be a degree, some extent of white internationalism in that sense. Now, on the other hand, I also agree with Laura in that Europe, I'll say this about the European Union. There is a very deliberate attempt in the European Union to Americanize the people of Europe. And what I mean by that is kind of mixing up all the white ethnicities. You got millions of Polish people in Britain, and then increasingly got millions of Ukrainians in Poland, and then suddenly you have millions of other Romanians in Germany, and so on. Now, this isn't even in the top 100 of the problems the West faces, and it's not even really that big of a deal. However, having an ethnic tradition that is totally validated by an existing country, that is such a powerful advantage European nationals have over Americans. With that said, we have to make do of what we have. You know, E. Michael Jones has written about the United States slaughter of cities, how the ethnic ties Italians and Irish and other groups had in the United States prior to the Second World War were a source of political, social, and cultural power. This was destroyed by suburbanization which again, it's not the worst thing in the world. It happened. We have to deal with it. And it's not like a negative per se. It is what you make of it. But you do become weaker in that context. So European nationals have a huge advantage, and there's no reason to throw that advantage away politically just to make a ideological point. So if you're a British nationalist, you must be for British first. But don't you have to have nuance. Do not fall for conservative poll baiting with you see Nigel Farage going around, saying, oh, the fucking polls, they're taking over. As you walk down the street and like you don't even see a single white person in London. So don't fall for that trick either. So it's very important to have a nuance and kind of a sensible position on this matter.
Yeah, I agree. And I think something else about Nigel Farage, he was very, very annoyed about the number of Poles coming over, but he spoke in front of a group of a very multicultural group and explained to that multicultural group how, you know, hopefully if the if we won the Brexit vote, that would mean more blacks would be coming here than Poles. And I think that to me is just insanity. Old River Crossing gave $50 Canadian. Thank you very much for the generous super chat. He said, thank you, Mark, Laura, Jason, and Eric, for all your work in the service of white well-being. If I could please do a shout out to a super chatter called Squirrels from last week's show with Endeavor. We also live in Ontario and want to build a community of like-minded people. If you could please contact me on Telegram at Old River Crossing, all in one word. So Squirrels, if you're watching, can you please look up Old River Crossing, all one word, on Telegram? I'm going to leave that message up in case you want to read it, Squirrels. Thank you very much. Blunderbuss gave $25. Thank you for the generous super chat. He said, Striker, are you enjoying the Jimmy Dore versus the Young Turks fight as much as I am?
Yes, the left is breaking out of, again, hyper reality. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is the Trump of the left. Now, that'll be controversial, but it is what I think. Jimmy Dore is putting enormous pressure on AOC and the squad, as they call it, who are obsessed with symbolic things like taking down white people's statues and destroying European heritage of a European country called America, and totally neglecting and, in fact, voting with the neoliberals on more capitalism, no health care, supporting Nancy Pelosi's highly unpopular, she's a 19%, I believe, approval rating, a highly unpopular speakership. And Jimmy Dore is putting a ton of pressure, as much as lame as it looks for a man with gray hair to be having a show dedicated entirely to Twitter drama. it seems to be having an impact, and he's exposing all the shills that are tricking and manipulating the populist left, just like the shills have been tricking and manipulating the populist right. So I support his endeavor and I wish him well.
Well, thank you very much. We've got a $35 super chat here from the Flying Dutchman. Thank you very much for the generous super chat. He says, the rally today in DC is a true Unite the Right rally, and the real right is shifting the conservative Overton window. Too bad you're not here, but I'm sure Jason will fill you in. Well, thank you very much for the super chat. And I believe that the rally today in DC will be a good thing for our people. I think it'll deal another death blow to the Republicans. Serena JB gave £3. Thank you very much. And she said, the left win by never giving up on their demands and never stop making more, whereas the fake right give into everything. They're pathetic. Big congratulations to Striker on the NJP. Well, thank you very much, Serena. And I agree with every word. The Flying Dutchman gave another $3 and he said, typo. Thank you very much. Lil Nasbol gave $3 and said, thank you for having Striker on. Well, thank you for the super chat. Flying Dutchman gave $25. Thank you very much for the generous super chat. He says, does Laura play the piano? Looks like a keyboard behind her. Perhaps she can play a couple of notes from Beethoven's Für Elise.
I do play the piano. It's actually a digital piano. So it's the same size as a piano, and it has weighted keys. It has 88 keys, but it's electronic, and the reason why I got one of those is just because I couldn't fit a normal piano up my stairs. But I have been playing, I think, for maybe 4 or 5 months, so I'm not very good. But if you go to my Telegram channel and then scroll back a little bit, there is a few videos of me playing like Mary had a little lamb, and I can play Lavender's Blue and Ode to Joy, Beethoven, but it's a very simplified version.
So we're not getting a full Beethoven recital tonight.
I'd probably freeze if you asked me to do it live.
Yeah, it's much harder doing things live than it is doing it just yourself. Junta Momonari gave $10 and he says, last year, a BLM protest was organized by the U.S. Embassy in the Dominican Republic to tear down the white supremacist Columbus statue in the capital. Black shirt wearing fascist Antigua Orden Dominica literally pummeled them and ended BLM. Evo Morales even stated his job is to also represent Kyrillos. Well, thank you very much. And yeah, I was saying this before. I don't know what Stryker's take is, but I've said this many times. The US is a real menace to the rest of the world. And if you look at the US embassies now around the world, what are they pushing? Well, American imperialism is pushing gay pride and BLM. Every single US embassy flies both of those flags at the moment. What are your thoughts on American imperialism being used for such evil around the globe?
Oh, yeah. Well, number one, our friends around the world should understand that the Washington regime is not just diametrically opposed, but irreconcilable with America, which is a country, the center of the country. Aside from San Francisco, New York, and Washington, the center of the country is full of normal, decent, charitable, and kind, and honorable white working people. And the fact that our government is doing this is just, it's for the same reason of any dictatorship. It's not with the approval of our countrymen. And second of all, the United States Zionist occupation utilizes Black Lives Matter. It utilizes these issues as soft power to influence and create chaos in countries that are either aligned to it, that it wants to cement its power over, or countries that may actually perhaps break away from the American-led order. So it's used, what I compare it to is that, the Soviet Union used to use the professional classes of other countries, lawyers, academics, journalists. They would inculcate the ideology of Marxism, Leninism, of communism in these classes and create all kinds of different antagonisms with them. The Soviets did this because these are the people that are the tastemakers, the gatekeepers, the people that steer the ship in a nation. It's the top 200,000 culture makers, as Francis Parker Yockey would call them. The United States is now using Soviet tactics like that to create little bubbles of power in capital cities from Warsaw to Dublin to Moscow to even trying in China, in various countries. They use what we call bug men or hipsters, people integrated in the tech economy, people that post on Reddit, that speak English. They're using them in Iran. You know, this is just an American subversion strategy that is being actively promoted by American intelligence services and American foreign policy. For example, there was a lot of dispute and argument and anger in this country over the last fiscal budget bill because there's $10 million going to Pakistani gender politics. So they're using $10 million to back transsexuals and feminists in Pakistan. And for what? It's to simply subvert the traditions of the Pakistani people for American capital and American Zionism to take root. And so this is what to understand. This is why any healthy European nationalism should be coupled with, at the very least, skepticism towards the United States, if not outright anti-Americanism. And again, America is the government, not the people. So, yeah.
Thank you. Rory Herbert gave $3. Thank you very much. He said, my sister-in-law and her husband are at the Washington, D.C. rally right now. What would Eric Stryker expect them to do? Just stay at home in Pennsylvania and do nothing?
I mean, if you want to go to the rally, that's okay. I mean, I'm not really here to judge anyone, but if you want to go to the rally, that's fine. I personally don't think it's my venue, because I'm not invested in Trump. But if you find some use to it, then more power to you.
Well, thank you. I do think the rally is, I think it's important. I think nationalists should have gone there, and I think the nationalists that are there should be spreading our message amongst the people there. We should use this to, as I say, damage the mainstream Republican Party and draw people away from conservatism towards radical nationalism. Evola's Monocle gave 10 euros. Thank you very much. He said Trump was useful for raising white consciousness, but ultimately he had to go. We need to stop supporting Zionist Republicans. Anyone know a good painter to stand as a third candidate? Thank you. Daniel Smith gave $3 and he said, check the news. Pro-Trump protesters have taken over the Capitol building. Congress members evacuated, drinking the beauty of a hyper-majority white group, making Congress run away in fear. Revolution. Well, thank you very much for the super chat, Daniel.
Oh, obviously, I will say this very quickly. If Trump was serious about a second term, he could easily marshal these people into making it happen. That's something that I will say, is that there is a revolutionary streak in there that if Trump doesn't handle it carefully, could blow up. And you could see, even today, you could see people storming the Congress and taking it over and saying,
they are. Okay, There is a woman on the floor. There was a protester now on the floor of the Senate, and they've evacuated it. And she's actually behind where the speaker would sit. There's multiple protesters in there now. There's a woman who's been shot in the neck by...
Good Lord, I haven't been following it as we did this thing, but wow.
No, this is all on Black Pilled's. This is all on Black Pilled's Telegram. It's going crazy. I mean, They have stormed the building. Here's a guy. I'm just watching a guy here. Trump supporters are scaling the walls. They're attacking police. They have literally taken over the building. Everyone's been evacuated, but sadly, a female Trump supporter, she has been shot in the neck as they were trying to breach the room. It looked like Secret Service shot her in the neck. So that's
I'm never going to attack the sincere Trump supporter. Now, I have problems with certain people that are trying to use us as Trump's henchmen. I don't support that. However, if you're a sincere Trump supporter, you probably share many of the same values I do, and you also share many of the same enemies. So I very much, like, I never attack the Proud Boys. I never attack Patriot Prayer and so on, even though I have very deep ideological disagreements with them. Now, you know, like I said, if Trump wants to be president, he could do it today. And all he has to do is stand behind these people and lead them to Congress and then just uncertify the vote, just surround the Congress and be like, okay, you want to certify the vote? You're going to have a problem if you do it, you know? So again, let's see how this plays out. I just hope, you know, some of these people, you know, these are poor people that are desperate, and this is how they're taking it out. And to see them getting shot and brutalized by the scumbag pigs of the Metropolitan Police Department in D.C., that makes me angry. That makes me very upset. So, you know, again, I'm not against these people that are doing this. I am just critical of Trump because I do not think Trump is sincere, and I think he is using them. But that is another argument for another day.
Well, as I say, I've been a fan of lots of things Trump has done in terms of shifting the Overton window. But do I think he's our guy? No, I don't. Do I think he acted as a good president? No. And I think that Trump made lots of mistakes in the White House, but the lasting effect of Trump and the movement around him should be something that helps us advance our cause, and it should be something that nationalists jump on board to try and steer in the right direction. I said, if you're not following this now on Blackpilled's channel, it really is insane what is going on there. And it does look like a revolution is taking place. Quite extraordinary scenes there.
I've never seen this before in the United States.
It's fantastic.
Something you see in third world countries, to be honest.
Well, thank you, Daniel Smith, for the super chat, and thank you for bringing that to our attention during the show. It's very important. Zero Schizo gave $5. Good to see you back, my friend. I haven't seen you here for a few weeks. He said to the panel, your thoughts on supposed third positionists accusing nationalists of being Nazbol due to our criticisms of capitalism. Since down here, specifically Chilean NS accused me and some friends of being Nazbol and even attempted to dox us for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a long thing. It's very much only happening on Twitter, and it's between very small groups of people. I mean, there's no point. Liberal capitalism is irreconcilable with nationalism. That's all I have to say about that. And supporting a socialist system is actually what the National Socialists, the European populist movements of the 30s, all the way to John Tyndall, as you know, Mark, John Tyndall, and so on and so on. These all have the exact same critique. So if that's what, quote, national Bolshevism, well, then every person in that movement historically has been a national Bolshevik. So, you know, again, if someone from, there are different Cold War priors that some people have about this, but let's be honest, the people that are censoring our speech, at least in America, they're not government actors. It's mostly big business doing it. So why shouldn't I support smashing the big businesses and nationalizing them? That's what a normal country would do. Why should our country be run by a couple of billionaires? You know, someone is going to run the country. There's no such thing as liberalism. Somebody is going to be planning not just the economy, but the culture and the society and your beliefs and the media. So let's put it in a transparent form and let the people run it, you know?
Well, somebody's just left a message in the chat saying Mike Pence has just unfollowed Donald Trump on Twitter. I don't know whether that's true.
Oh, shot fired.
Yeah.
Once someone unfollows you on Twitter, that's how you know it's serious.
That's it over. Yeah, exactly. Summer Risewig gave $12. Thank you very much. Thank you for the donation, but didn't give any message. Roy Danton left $10. Thank you very much. If you'd like to email me about that, Roy, that would be really good. If you could send me an email about that issue, I'd be very, very much like to hear from you. Email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Half Pint gave £3 and said, hi, Mark and Laura. I will be sure to submit my shortbread recipe to the community recipe book. Well, Half Pint is the guy that gave us the idea for doing the baking contest. It was his excellent shortbread which won us over to this idea. And finally, Weird Internet Guy gave £20 and said, hiya, please put this towards metaphorically stamping on leftist scum if you can. Smiley face. Well, we will certainly put it to good use. Do not worry about that. It seems Entropy has ceased working. So if you're having problems with Entropy, please keep trying and see if you can reconnect. I am trying to reconnect now. I'm not sure why that's happening. But yeah, that is an issue. So what do you think about this then, guys? I mean, we often see this from the left, from Black Lives Matter, but I don't think I've ever in my lifetime seen the quote-unquote right wing in America this fired up or acting in this form of revolutionary way. Now, I know there's been a lot of criticism of Trump, but boy, has he fired people up. He's getting a response out of people that I never, ever thought I would see out of anyone who would vote for a mainstream conservative party.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think to this?
Yeah, Trump supporters are not conservatives. That's something else people need to understand. They are not conservatives. Trump ran a semi blood and soil candidacy in 2016. And that's how he won the love of these people. Now, when it comes to the failures of his presidency, that can be debated. You know, they've leaned into Trump's personality cult as well. And Trump has awakened something. And it's not that he awakened it. He's marshaling it, because what happens is that now people have an issue to rally around. I'm not even that sure that all of them really believe that Trump is going to be president, but it's an issue to express your outrage at this illegitimate system. And to see people, you know, you can, the phony right, the liberal kind of Tory right, as we know with some people out there, they will constantly stress being skeptical and hyper analytical and so on, you know, and that's good to a certain point, but it also rejects action. When you are too analytical, you will always psych yourself out from acting. And so this is something that Trump has broken on the right. That Tory liberal individualist streak has been destroyed on the American right. And that is partially through the polarization that Trump has caused in this country as a symbol of resistance against the media, the big businesses, and so on. Even if his presidency served those interests, it doesn't matter, because in terms of the theater, at least, the propaganda that Trump puts out, that is how he is positioning himself. And you know, this could end with Trump going to prison if he takes it too far. So don't be surprised if you see that. But anyway, yeah.
What do you think to this, Laura? Did you think you would see what is being termed in the chat as Boomer Waffen storming?
Well, I was just following the chat to try and find out what happened. I'm not sure if that woman who's been shot has, is it critical or is she still alive? I'm not sure. But somebody said in the chat, let's see.
Getting shot in the neck is generally critical, Laura. I think a bullet wound to the neck is never.
I'm not sure. I hope she's not dead. But somebody said in the chat that they wonder if her shooting will get as much worldwide media attention as the George Floyd kneeling got. And then I went to Twitter, and the first thing that I saw was a white guy lying on the floor with somebody kneeling on his neck, and they were recreating the George Floyd thing on the steps. So I'm not sure what that's all about. But yeah, if you just go to Twitter and scroll down your feed, it's everyone's talking about it. It's crazy.
Well, as I say, we do have more questions on entropy, but for me, it's just crashed. I'm not sure what's going on there. If other people are having a problem, it's obviously really disappointing for this to happen in the middle of the show, especially as people are super chatting. And I'm genuinely sorry if I cannot read out your super chat because of these technical issues. I have just sent a message to the Entropy team to ask what's going on, because obviously this does affect the show. And my apologies for that. And we did have some non-paid questions, which I was hoping to give to Eric about this. But there are some other things I'd like to ask Eric about the National Justice Party. Eric, with you starting this party, do you hope in the future to ever run as third party candidate, or would you put National Justice Party representatives into in as Republicans and try to use your party to change and influence the Republican Party?
Yes, I have my own opinions on that, but we have to talk with the Central Committee first before I give a public position on that. But you know, that's obviously well within the realm of likelihoods of running spoiler candidates, because if politicians at the very least see spoilers, now that these elections are coming down to 10, 20,000 votes, they're going to grant concessions. They're just forced to. Furthermore, there are many places, because of the gerrymandering system in the United States, there are many places in America where you can possibly run as a third position National Justice Party guy as a Republican and win. because of the way these districts, gerrymandering for British people that don't know, is kind of the artificial drawing up of congressional districts to reflect an advantage to one political party. And so if you have a district that is 80% Republican, you could use a small, you know, relatively smaller portion of the electorate to primary Republicans and then win no matter what in general elections, because there's just some people that vote. I mean, Art Jones, who is like a member or was a member of the the National Socialist Movement, he won like 35% or 40% of the vote in Chicago as a congressional candidate. Now, that's because there are people that are going to vote Republican no matter what, but who cares? So there's a lot of things you can do, even electorally, in spite of all the institutional blocks for a third party, which are fundamentally undemocratic, but we can complain about that all day. You just have to, like I said, our mission as nationalists to save our people, to save our civilization, to save our children and grandchildren is that we have to invent a way out. If there's no open path, you have to invent it. So we're just going to have to sit down and think about how this could work. You know, that's just how it is.
Well, I think it's excellent that you're organizing in the way you are. And I also think it's really, really good what you, Mike, and the other NJP officials have done here. Now, there has in the past been what I think is a really, really damaging trend amongst the dissident right or alt-right, and that is for people to basically make lots and lots of money making videos, etc., and constantly commenting and commentating on things, but never getting involved in real-life politics. And I think what you guys have done is really, really wonderful. It's just what America needed. Actually taking the TRS network, which had built up such a good array of programs, had built up such goodwill in the community, and using that to create a real life network for change, I think that is so, so admirable. And it's obviously something that we're trying to do here in the UK with PA. And to see the way that PA has grown in the last sort of 18 months is it even 18 months? No, it's not. About 15 months is just incredible. We've made so many strides. We've got regional organizers all over the country. There's regional meetings. And I get so many emails on a regular basis from people who had previously been very, very isolated. They felt atomized. They felt as if they couldn't speak to anyone. And one of the great, great things of running an organization like this is speaking to people who previously had no one in the real world they could speak to, and then seeing them attend a meeting or a gathering and actually getting to express themselves for the first time in real life, openly and honestly, with other like-minded people. And you see people come out of their shell. You see they blossom. And it's small things. There's a guy who emailed me just a week or so ago, actually. And he said, just to say thank you for doing the Call of Duty Warzone tournament, just to say that he'd met somebody there and now he's playing with him regularly and they're chatting. And bringing people together in small ways like that, building a community, the importance of that can never, never be underestimated. And I know that YouTube was once massive for us. I know at one time getting videos with 1 million+ views seemed absolutely fantastic, and it was. But for all those views, nothing solid came of it. It was great for your ego, seeing that many people watching your content, but nothing positive in the real world came of it. But getting 10 people together, sat in a room, expressing themselves, making real friends, forming real bonds, that's something genuine. That's something tangible. And that's why the NJP is so important.
Oh, yeah. I hate to beat on the dead horse, but hyper-normalization, hyper-realism. Why do we have that? Why do our elites, our Zionist elites that control our media, why do they inculcate that and have that be. And the reason for it is that they don't want normal people to understand that they're the majority. We are the majority. Normal people have the power to actually change this country if they just get together. But the what they do instead is they gaslight you into thinking the normal people are the abnormal people. The people that want to release criminals, rapists and murderers, because of some phony racism charge that they make against American history, those are the crazy people. Those are the people. I mean, even a lot of blacks and Mexicans and East Asians and stuff, even some of those people are like, you know, we don't want this either. So the fact that we have a tiny, frankly, mentally ill, often inbred, then you have also their minions that go to the Ivy League universities of the United States, their aspiring elites. These people do not even represent 5% of the actual popular opinion. And yet they make all the decisions. We're not even at the table. And that's something that we need to break with. And you do that through community efforts. Now, I will not attack or knock information and education, because that needs to come first in the revolutionary process. If people are not educated, if millions of people are not educated on or even hear these opinions, then you can't get them to meet in person. However, much of that work has already been done, and the system has made it so it's very difficult to not actually find alternatives to talking over the internet, thanks to surveillance, thanks to infiltration, thanks to censorship. So people are getting together in real life, and they're way, way more afraid of that than they are of some people posting memes, okay? Although they're not unafraid of that either. So yeah, that's, I totally agree with you, Mark.
We actually get quite a lot of emails from Americans saying that they love Pierre and they support us and they wish that they had something like Pierre in America. And I usually say back to them, have you heard of NJP? Do you guys have a contact form on your website? Is it best just to direct people to your website?
Yes, yes. The contacts are on the website. Unfortunately, there are a couple of issues. One is that America is so large, like physically large, that it's not as easy as in the United Kingdom to start little regional groups right away with trusted people. But also, we get tons of emails as well. And because we're still in the stage of registering and so on, because you know, in America, you have to, if you're a dissident, you have to cross all your T's and dot your I's, because if not, the government will harass you. So, you know, we're making sure with legal and with legal support that we have everything perfect before we start expanding chapters and expanding membership and so on. But we are being very deliberate about this. However, the seeds are already being planted, and we get thousands of emails that, especially after Mike's speech over the summer, we got thousands of emails from people that are saying, finally, we have something for us. I mean, we were actually kind of shocked about that when we started receiving them. So it's happening everywhere. There's a market for these politics. And that's why the system needs to use dirty tricks to make sure that we can't express ourselves under their constitutions. You know, I mean, this is the thing. It's they set the rules. We're playing by their rules. And they are doing everything in their power to avoid respecting our rights, which is why we need to found legal networks, lawyers, lawyer guilds. And that is another thing that people adjacent are in the works with, to challenge the system in courts, which is where American rights are settled and American politics, frankly, are often settled, is in court. To challenge them legally like that. So we have a lot of different plans and ambitions, but we are being deliberate and not overly careful, but taking measures to ensure that, you know, they don't do what we call gay ops against us. So, yeah.
Well, just touching on what you said, you've just released a very interesting article about those sort of operations against us and how certain specific groups are being used to try and undermine our cause, both sides of the Atlantic.
Yes. It's actually really disturbing. You have something called RICU in Britain that is essentially a Cold War era black ops unit in the Home Office. And in the United States, the equivalent is the FBI. And essentially, I uncovered a document that was leaked very recently, a couple weeks ago, showing that the FBI and counterterrorism analysts see the use of Satanism and certain types. People know it when they see it, you know, on Telegram. You know when it looks like a Fed honeypot. You know, people promoting pedophilia and Satanism and filth like that. And basically what the intelligence services of America and Britain have concluded is that they can astroturf these kinds of ideas and aesthetics and so on through these Telegram networks that we've seen them, basically will demoralize anyone who sees them. So they're intended, these are phonies that say they are nationalists, that say they share your end goals, but many of them are infiltrated with government agents. And there's a two-pronged approach. The first one is to discredit nationalism and disillusion nationalists. And the second is to attract the freakiest and most mentally ill people, oftentimes autistic 14-year-old boys. In the United Kingdom, we saw last year a 14-year-old boy was sentenced to almost 7 years in British prison for an informant-driven plot to attack synagogues. No pity for him, an autistic little boy. And so this is what they're doing. This is evil stuff that they are trying to use to discredit us. And you and I, Mark, we're both kind of old heads. And I can see the power of what they're doing, because in my research, I was shocked to see this. I only realized this very recently. Combat 18 was an MI5 operation. And I will tell you how effective this is on young men, teenage boys especially. When I was 16 or 17 years old, I thought Combat 18 was awesome. You know, and lo and behold, it comes out that the leader of Combat 18, Charlie Sargent, is done in a documentary. Was a faithful MI5 special and a special branch informant at the very least, an asset, and that the British National part, the Combat 18 group, was created to undermine the electoral success of the British National Party by endorsing terrorism and creating infighting, gossip. I mean, we see these things today. And so, you know, I'm not saying every single person doing that is a teenager, is a Fed or an operative of some kind. But I will say that, you know, it should always raise your eyebrows when you see someone who spends more time attacking people that appear to share their specific political agenda. They attack those people more than they do their shared enemies. William Pierce has written about this. John Tyndall wrote about this. These are great men, and they should be listened to. And I find that the fact that there's COINTELPRO going on is an obvious fact, and the fact that left-wing journalists who, if it was happening to Muslims, would be writing about it. I guarantee you that there are many journalists that are getting leaked documents showing the morally abhorrent, frankly, downright evil things that the governments are doing to us. And these journalists are taking these documents, crumpling them up and throwing them in the garbage because they share the ultimate goals of these intelligence services, which is to terrorize people. It's to demoralize people. It's to intervene with people engaging in peaceful dissent. And so we're just up against everyone. And this article should be an eye-opener to especially our youth, 13-year-old, 14-year-old boys that get swept up by these informants and these operatives, and then entrapped, and then they end up going to prison for 10 years. You know, so that's just my view on that.
Well, thank you, Erica. It's very important. I have dropped the dropped the link to that excellent article into the chat so people can have a look at it. And obviously, at the end of the show, when I post this up on BitChute, I will put a link to any sites and any social media that you want me to. Anyway, talking of the end of the show, we are about there, and we have the final numbers in for tonight. We had 1,700 watching on DLive, and we've had 1,500, well, over 1,500 watching and listening over at Radio Albion. So very, very strong numbers for tonight's show, 3,200 people watching. I think Eric certainly contributed to that excellent start to the new year. And considering we're up against the storming of Congress, those aren't bad numbers. And I'm sure many of the viewers will be going to watch that afterwards. And I really do hope that the lady who was shot in the neck makes a full recovery. But obviously with a wound like that, that could be very well, at the very least, life-changing. So very sorry for her and her family. But closing the show, Eric, my friend, can you please give yourself a little outro and tell us where we can find you and how we can support your excellent work?
Yes, you can find my my journalism blog at national-justice. We're planning on a massive expansion at some point in the near future. There's also going to be the revival by popular decree of the People's Square. It will be exclusively on DLive. I'm in talks with Borzoi for the sequel. And it should be back next week on the 15th. And what else? Oh, yeah, the National Justice Party, nationaljusticeparty.com. It's a separate entity from National-Justice, but it's a political organization. So you can find updates from Chairman Painovich. You can find articles by myself and others like Warren Baylog and so on. Good luck to the comrades in Europe, in particular, the comrades in Patriotic Alternative. They're doing great work. We have to keep the faith and understand that you are rolling a boulder up a mountain. And the thing is, if you stop pushing forward, you will be rolled by the boulder. So we just have to have faith in the final victory. That is how we're going to get through these very, very tough times. So, yeah, that's my view on that.
Well, thank you very much, my friend. Laura, it has been great having you as a co-host this week as Jason is in Washington. Would you like to give yourself a little outro?
We work with each other every week, so I think your audience knows who I am. But obviously, I'm the deputy leader of Patriotic Alternative. Check out our website because we have a number of new articles going up every single day. And also check out my YouTube channel because we have the baking competition and the recipe book initiative that we're starting. But just want to say thanks for inviting me, Mark. I nearly called you Mike then. And thanks to Eric as well for being here tonight. Thank you to everyone in the audience. I hope you enjoy the rest of your evening, and I'll see you again soon.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you to Eric and thank you to Laura. Now, just remember, the Warzone tournament will be held on Sunday evening, 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. That's 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It'll be streamed on my YouTube. It'll also be streamed by American Krogan and Chris. Also, we will be having a stream on Friday night about the lockdown and COVID. That'll be here on DLive. I will put out information on my Telegram about that beforehand. And I will also be appearing on the Kill stream in the early hours of Saturday morning. So I hope to see you all there. So finally, I would like to thank Laura. I would like to thank Eric. I would like to thank everybody who donated so generously. I'm sorry the
the entropy stopped working. So if you have donated and I couldn't read your super chat, my apologies. But finally, and most of all, I would like to thank everybody who has watched the show. This community is absolutely wonderful. This is why we do this. Building this community has been a labor of love, and it has really, really paid off. Thank you so much. Love you all. Stay safe, and I'll see you on Friday. Have a great evening.